Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lenning School Watch with Diane Lenning interviewing New Jersey candidate for Governor Matt Riccardi. This is Diane Lenning, your host for tonight's show. After retiring from over 30 years of teaching, I entered into politics. About 6 years later, I earned a law degree, which serves me well in politics as a blogger, political analyst, writer, and speaker. And among other areas of teaching, my years as a history and government educator, as well as my love for my country, have given rise to my active part in state and national politics. I enjoy helping candidates, like we are tonight, have an opportunity for a level playing field, at least a chance of fairness in running for office. It seems so much of politics has been decided by a money oligarchy, which has upset the original intent in the way Americans are chosen to political office. Our founders and framers of our Constitution and our Republic intended a more people-oriented government, where our government would be of, by, and for the people. In the beginnings, people were elected to office from their local jobs, served a few terms, and returned to their local communities. Sadly, today, many Congress members and elected officials have become embedded in government, often not willing to let go. For to let go and go home would be to lose their power. Many have learned to enjoy and manipulate for their own personal agenda. With these thoughts in mind, I have decided to help new candidates with conservative views where I can. When we all do a bit to help our cause, the aggregate amount together is huge and dramatic. In my opinion, too many Congress members and other elected officials stay in office too long. I'm beginning to think we need term limits in higher office, and perhaps even a mandatory retirement age, such as 78 or 80, perhaps even lower. When someone is 80, wealthy, and used to wielding power that sometimes hurts middle-class Americans, that person can become a problem rather than an official serving the people. Tonight, I'm happy to introduce to many of you a vibrant young man, Matt Riccardi, for governor of New Jersey. This will be one of your opportunities to learn about who he is, his views on important issues, and what type of leadership Matt Riccardi will offer, as well as an opportunity for you to step into political activism if you wish. A bit of housekeeping before we bring him in. Here's Matt Riccardi's contact info. Please write it down so you can contact him later. You can donate to his campaign through his website. And think, when I give you all these websites and emails, think Riccardi for New Jersey, because those are some of the initials. The website is www.r.com. the number 4nj.org. That stands for Riccardi for New Jersey. Again, it's R, the number 4nj.org. On Facebook, he has a page, www.facebook.com/Riccardi with two C's, the number 4NJ. His name is spelled RICCARDI, 4NJ. Now you can write to Matt Riccardi at Riccardi for Governor, P.O. Box 902, Neptune, New Jersey, 07753-0902. You can reach him or his organization by email at communications@r4nj.org. Again, that's communications@r4nj.org. Remember, the 4 is always the number 4. There's two Twitter accounts, at Riccardi for NJ and at Team Riccardi NJ. I will repeat all the information again at the end of the interview tonight. And also, this information is posted on the interview page right now at blogtalkradio.com/Diane-Lenning. Look for the interview with Matt Riccardi. This interview will be archived and you can view it or listen to it later with your friends. There should be pictures scrolling for you if you're listening to the show. You'll be watching his pictures. And so that will give you a picture of what he looks like. After introductions, Matt will share with you a bit about himself and his goals at Governor. If you wish to call in, I have a toll-free number, and this is during the showtime only. It's 1-877-497-9937. Again, during the show, you can call in toll-free number 1-877-497-9937. Now, it's just about time to bring in candidate Matt Riccardi for Governor of New Jersey. Hello, Matt. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Diane. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Oh, great. Well, please take some time now to share with us about yourself, why you are running for governor, and your goals as governor. We'd love to hear that.
Yes, absolutely. And first, before I even get to that, again, thank you so much. You are an inspirational person. I've looked at your story and everything that you've done in the education, and obviously after that, how you went into law school and got your degree. So it's an honor to be here. And a shout out, my brother Michael is a Marine veteran, and he's a police officer in Anaheim, California. So Mike is working right now, but I love him, and I just wanted to give him a shout out. So for me, I'm running for governor here in New Jersey. I'm 30. I'm a millennial. I just got put into the Library of Congress for a historical reason. Our website is in there and some information and some videos. They didn't tell me why, but I assume it has something to do with running as a millennial. Either that or it has to do with a contract that we'll talk about. But my purpose is running because New Jersey, like the United States of America, is at an enormous, it's at the edge of a cliff. It's at the precipice. And it's an economic fall that we face, and so much that comes as a result of that. And we have disenfranchised people. We're the last in so much in this country with regards to our economics and with regards to various social issues. So I've got three kids, and I'm a Marine, I'm an Ivy Leaguer, and I've done so many different things that have rounded out my background. And I'm a problem solver, so I say, the key thing is God says that there isn't an option this year for me to vote for, and there are probably a lot of people like me. So when that happens in life, you've got to be the option. So I stepped up to the plate to give people an option to have an honest man who trusts in the Constitution with a very, very politically sound and powerful background. And that's the gist of why I'm fighting. I'm fighting for people,
And thank you, Matt, for stepping up to the plate to run for office. I have run for state office in California twice, so I know what it's like and how much work it is. And I want to let the caller who's waiting to talk and all callers who might call in know that we'll take a couple of calls at the end of the interview. Now, since this is an education-related show, Lending School Watch, I'll start with an education question. My questions have information and some sub-questions. Now, you can choose to start your answer, Matt, wherever you like, and I can refresh your memory if you want to answer more about each subject. Now, education is a topic everyone knows and cares about for our kids and their future, indeed the future of America. Today, we have many things going on in education: free choice in education, charter schools, online schools, homeschooling, private and public schools, and consideration of vouchers for funding that could follow each child from K through 12. And also we have the issue of increased incidence of autism and special education services among students. And I might note here that I am a resource specialist, so I can talk on par with the governor here. And so at this time, Matt, would you please share your views about these and any other issues in education that you'd like to share?
Sure, yeah, and thank you. This is a great place to start, and I love the opportunities that have become available throughout our state and throughout the country, and love the idea that President Trump is thinking in lines of fixing education with more of a constitutional mindset. So for me, I look at the education system, and I've got three kids, and I chose to, my wife and I made a decision to homeschool our son. New Jersey is a great state to homeschool. The regulations are not, extremely infringing. And we decided that because the state, and actually just in general, the country, the curriculum and the Common Core and so many other things that are going wrong within the schools with regards to behavior and such, we decided that it was best that we homeschool, that we provide the best education possible for our son and obviously for our children below him when they come of age. So I am for school choice 100%. We have a bill here in New Jersey that is it's a great bill. It's a solid bill, and it's the Parental Rights and Property Tax Reduction Act. It's something that we've looked into that will provide rights that are God-given rights, the right to be able to choose where you educate your child. And as a result, the fact that property taxes are tied, or education is tied so heavily to property taxes, and New Jersey is the worst by far in the country, it would also reduce and provide relief to the state, because I believe the average per pupil that we spend is over $22,000 at this point, and property tax average in the state is $8,100. I know in California you can probably relate, but it's a major issue that people are having, and when you're in so much debt as New Jersey is, you've got to find a solution. But even beyond the debt and the economics of it, we're looking at school choice because school choice provides so many opportunities for kids that there are that do not exist. For instance, as you'll know, inside the urban communities, they suffer, and even though they can have the Abbott ruling from the Supreme Court with regards to the New Jersey case, where they force taxes to be poured into those Abbott districts, those low-income districts, it has not, for the past 30 years, ever since it's been in existence, it has not provided a benefit. The school, the education in those Abbott districts has not gotten any better. Facebook donated $100 million to Newark, to Cory Booker, to help him when he was the mayor, and the money went, and the schools have not gotten any better. So the reality is that there is a monopoly within our school system, and we need to do what America does best, and we need to create competition. So school choice, prior to contrary belief, where people think that it's this big religious thing, it's not. It's the ability to give people the choice to put their kids wherever they see fit. So if they want to drive an hour away and put their kids in a school that's an hour away, then they have the right to do that, and that's how it works. And with regards to the autism, adding that in there, my initiative would be also to obviously include and to give children. New Jersey has the highest incidence rate in the country. 1 in 37 or 1 in 35 kids are diagnosed with autism now in New Jersey. So you want to make sure that they are a big part of whatever the education system is. Currently, there are kids in New Jersey that go to a school without having an autism autism specialist, and that is an absolute shame. It's got to be awful for a parent not having the confidence in sending your kid there, and there's not a person that can help to understand them, that's certified to deal with them, and to help their issue that they have when it comes to learning. So we need to be able to step up, and school choice does that. And one of the initiatives that I have to help to provide a better education for kids with autism is to create a council where we bring parents, you know, parents are allowed to be involved in the education system within the schools that their kids go to. They can have a hands-on approach in the schools. It doesn't cost any money to allow the parents to be there to take that hands-on approach. So if you have a child that has extremely special needs when it comes to autism, you know how to help them. You know how to aid them best. So we want to be able to have parents have a more hands-on approach. So that's where I stand when it comes to the education in kids with autism.
Well, I appreciate your comments, and as a parent of a daughter with autism, we adopted her 18 years ago, but she is a biological family member. I am aware of her going all through school, public school, with and under the teaching of autism or special ed, really, specialists. These specialists, in my case, were wonderful, but I was fortunate. I am aware that there are many schools without this necessary program. And I personally believe that the younger we start with programs for kids with autism, the less money it will cost eventually. Because when, as a special ed teacher, I was a resource specialist in high school for high school students. When we could address their problems and issues when they were younger, then I could have much larger classes. I had about up to 24 in a class of resource students, and that gets the cost down. So we're looking at the cost of things, and there are definitely things that will make a difference. So the next question, you dovetailed it a little bit regarding cost, is what is your contract with New Jersey of People Over Politics, and what are New Jersey's problems and issues you see need addressing for the people of New Jersey?
Sure, yeah. And so the contract is a major idea that the Constitution Party came up with. I chose to run for the Constitution Party, and it's something that I am proud to be the first person in America, so to speak, who has implemented this into their campaign. And you may have heard, Newt Gingrich had a contract with America, but Newt Gingrich had no teeth in his contract. This contract has teeth. When I say that I'm going to do something, I am going to do it, and it's going to be written down in a legally binding contract that is between me and we the people, and it will be notarized, and it will come with consequences. If I break any of my campaign promises within my contract, then I am held liable. Anything that I say that I'm going to do will be added to my contract. Therefore, I will not be ever making promises and not adding them to it. So there's no way for me to escape. This measure has been put forth to address one of the greatest concerns, not only in New Jersey, but America, because New Jersey is really a microcosm of what America is right now. It's lacking leadership, and it's lacking good men and women of integrity and accountability who stand by the Constitution. And for me, that's what it's all about. So the contract is to cripple and to crush the opposition, because I know that the opposition at this point so far, both of the duopoly candidates, they are there talking about how they're going to do all these things. Now, two things we know: politicians don't tell the truth very often, and they tend to not back up the promises that they make. And then the second thing is that they make these promises knowing that the majority of Americans do not know their Constitution, they don't have the time to be educated, and they're not able to pay attention. Therefore, just like we saw with Bernie Sanders and his popularity, somebody that becomes a punchline pundit, whoever tells the better story and drops the most punchlines, they're the ones, because of the media coverage and how it's skewed, they're the ones that benefit. And that's what's happening with these politicians and these candidates. One guy is saying $15 minimum wage, single-payer health care, free college, legalized marijuana, and everything that sounds wonderful and popular. The issue is that we're already $232 billion in debt, and there's no way for him to actually fulfill any of these promises. In addition to him and the other candidate, there's no way for them to fulfill their promises because they both continue to promise things that we learn about in grammar school, which is that there's three branches of government, and the executive branch is not the one that makes law. So my contract holds them accountable and holds me accountable. The issue with them is they refuse to sign it, and that would be my question for everyone that's listening. If they refuse to sign a contract with promises that they make to you, why would you ever vote for them? In reality, they're telling you that they have no intention of keeping those promises because they know that they can't keep them because they're just gimmicks. So that's really key and really important for everyone to know, and I really appreciate you bringing that up because most of the media tends to gloss over it and they don't want to talk about it because they know that they are pushing for one candidate or another to win and they don't want a guy like me to spoil it for them. But with regards to the second question, the issues in New Jersey. So the greatest issue in New Jersey, and I think it would be the same for, at least similar for California and several other states, is affordability. And you've got outrageous taxation, you've got the government overreaching, you've got legislation that's crippling businesses, crippling taxpayers. The people are fleeing and the businesses are fleeing from New Jersey at a rate worse than any other state. The business climate is the worst. Our economic outlook is the worst. We've got the most debt by far in the country. We've got the worst taxpayer burden, and we've got the most foreclosures. We've got the most millennials leaving and the most millennials living in their parents' houses. So we've got a lot of issues here. But the key is that why? They're all linked together because New Jersey has an affordability issue. And my key to that is to bring liberty, integrity, and prosperity to alleviate that problem. And I can highlight that, obviously, throughout the interview.
Wow, we identify with that in California, I can tell you that for certain. Now, all of you voters listening in New Jersey, please, when you get Matt Riccardi elected, also make sure you have a legislature that will support him and work with him, and you'll get your state turned around. I believe it. I have confidence, and I know if you participate, you will do it together. Okay, another question. Would you agree that without jobs enough for most Americans, our economy and people may suffer? And do you agree with President Trump's goals to bring back jobs from overseas? And I have other related questions too.
Sure, absolutely. So, yeah, I and thank you. Another great question that pertains to everything I've been talking about. So before Donald Trump, I think, even got inaugurated, I had already declared. And some of the things I've been talking about for 8 months is that we need to alleviate the burden on New Jerseyans and make things more affordable and give everyone constitutional liberty back when it, the way it pertains to each and every one of us economically. And so what that looks like is New Jersey has the highest property taxes, and most of the states that are lingering around our percentage of 2.38, most of those states do not have income tax. And I've been calling for us to get rid of the state income tax. People are saying that we need property tax reduction, and that may be true, and I agree with that. And we can get that through our school choice bill, but even beside that, if you had control over all the money that you made, that's liberty, right? And how much better would your life be? The average family loses $3,500 to $5,000 in our state income tax. How much better and how much more would they be able to afford if they were able to keep that money? And that is constitutional because, you know, if the government decided that they were going to tax, food and tax avocados and make them a dollar more expensive – you would naturally say, well, I have the choice and I don't really like avocados, so I'm not going to buy it, or I love them and the extra dollar is worth it. But in reality, what the government does with regards to our state income tax and so much else is they say, you're going to eat the avocados, we're going to charge them a dollar extra, and it's too bad for you. And that's not liberty. And what we need in this state and in this country, and why I support President Trump's agenda, is we need liberty. We need to go back to the constitutional values and principles that provide liberty for each and every single one of us. Who here would not want to keep every single dime that they make? I mean, it's just common sense, and it seems like a really great idea. If you earned it, you deserve it. So the way to bring back jobs is to go on to the second part of that. We have a horrible corporation tax as well. Our rate is the highest, I think, in the country as well. If not, it's at the very top at 9% or 9-point-something. But the key is that the corporation tax is crippling the business climate, and people, the business are fleeing our state, and they're taking tons of revenue with them. So how do you stop that? For me, I look to eliminate the corporation tax. The corporation tax is draconian. It's outdated, and it's not needed, because what it does is it taxes all – 60% of our businesses are $500,000 or less in our state. That's what they make. And what it does is it taxes them at 9%, but the large corporations who have rich 100-millionaire, you know, billionaire, you know, CEOs and stuff, they don't pay the corporation tax. We all know that they pay lawyers to get through the loopholes. In fact, President Trump said that he – did that himself. He did that himself. He used the legal loopholes and he got through it. So we know that they're doing it. And if they're doing it and they're the highest grossing businesses, our state is not getting revenue, and it's creating a system, you know, it's creating an oppressive state for all the other businesses that are involved. So if you level the playing field, you cut the corporation tax and you adopt a gross profits fee system like several other states have, and you make it somewhat geared towards the more that you make, the more that you pay, but you make it so much less than what the actual tax percentage is, you will see a robust economy. You'll see an explosion in the business climate. You will see we'll make over $14 billion revenue in year one. That's 10 more than what we're making right now. And then by year four, you figure that all these other businesses will be coming from Pennsylvania, from all over the country, and maybe even all over the world, as President Trump wants as well, to do business here in New Jersey. That brings more money to our state. So we could go all the way up to $30 billion or more. In a state that has $200-plus billion of debt, we could really use $30 billion of revenue without taxing the taxpayers. So I completely believe that that would bring jobs, opportunities. You want to talk about how the Democrats love harping on identity politics and on the minorities and on the urban communities. Yet in reality, we see that they don't help the urban communities. They give them a system of a welfare state instead of what I would say they need, which is a well-being. They don't need welfare. They need well-being. They need opportunities. They need jobs. They need to have the same opportunities that are afforded to every single other person within the Constitution. They need to be treated like people, not like people that need handouts that we have to sit here and babysit. They need to have the same quality of life as the rest of us, and the only way to provide that is to level the playing field, allow the cities to explode and become the lifeblood of our state again, and that for a fact, bringing jobs. You won't need $15 minimum wage, which cripples an economy, because you'll have wage competition that comes with actual benefits, like from when I was a kid, when I was a senior in high school, and I got that kind of a job. That's what we need in the cities.
Well, Matt, you're making sense to me, but I have a couple more questions in relation to jobs and the economy. You know, when I was younger, we had much more manufacturing here in America. Most everything we could buy could be purchased from American-made companies, although we brought in from other countries. And we usually just had the energy sources such as oil, gas, and coal, and we've incorporated more solar and wind. So how can more or better or different manufacturing in America work into a better economy? And what about the type energy sources we would use for those?
Yeah, so another great topic. So here in America, obviously we have an issue, and you see everything's made in China. So it's common sense, really, for anyone. You don't have to be an economic guru to see China's economy has exploded, and they are now the second largest, and they are on pace to pass us very short period of time, and that's really awful news for us. But how did that happen? Well, you see that we're buying everything made in China, and China's economy is exploding. What does that tell you? That somebody or some people, not somebody, but several people at the top have been making really poor decisions with regards to our manufacturing, with regards to our trade, with regards to tariffs, with regards to our agreements such as NAFTA and so many other areas that play a key role, our relations with other countries. When you're at the top and when you're in a country that is so politically correct and you don't have someone with teeth at the top who's going to make these deals, and they continue to get, well, we'll give up a little bit here, a little bit there. We want to make these other countries happy, and we want to keep them happy. Well, guess what? Before you know it, They're all happy. They're all growing at a great rate. They're all about to pass us, and the people in this country are suffering tremendously. And we see that here in New Jersey, not just manufacturing. What I'd love to see is I would love to see for my state, and obviously there are several others that can relate, I would love to see us put an emphasis and a focus on those middle-skill jobs, right? So you have the low skill, you have the high skill, and then you have the middle. The middle is the people that are that have their high school education, obviously, and people that have gone on to take on a trade. And here in New Jersey, we are at a huge deficit with regards to our middle-skilled workers. And that's something that we have an abundance of the high skill, and we have an abundance of the low skill, but we have an enormous shortage when it comes to the middle skill workers. I think that's the case here in America as well, and that is why, because we're sitting. Obama, you know, harped on the dreamers, 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 and what is the dreamers? It's people that, so kids, obviously, illegal immigrants, that their goal and their idea of the American dream is a college education. But in reality, Obama should have been telling everyone that dreamers are people who just want to achieve the American dream, and that is to chase after liberty, life, liberty, have their pursuit of happiness, but to chase after the economic opportunities that are afforded through the Constitution. And some people, many people that I know from the United States Marine Corps, who I served with, are people that could care less about college. They loved fixing trucks, and guess what? The best jobs out there right now, entry-level jobs, are fixing trucks and fixing things. And that's what Americans do best, and that's where our emphasis should be. STEM is great, and we want to keep doing that. We want to be at the top of innovation and technology, but we also need to remember that in order to get those things going, we need people that are, truck drivers. We need people that are fixing all of the stuff that we're using, the technology that we're using. So an emphasis needs to be poured in there, and I think that if we do that, it will turn the tides, and we'll be able to really bring home the idea and the agenda of President Trump for the benefit and the betterment of our country. I fully and wholeheartedly believe that. Whether you like him or not, I truly believe this is a fantastic plan, and it's a fantastic opportunity that we should all rally behind, because it is for the betterment of our country. And with regards to those coal jobs and the energy jobs, I think that we should pursue whatever it is that is going to be the most effective, the most efficient, and the least costly way of doing things here in this country. Whatever provides best for our country in terms of efficiency and effectiveness. And after you gain those two, hey, if you can get a good price for it, go for it. But it should never be whatever is just the cheapest, or harping off of this whole climate change thing where you don't even have scientific proof, and it's they sit there and they scream that it's scientifically proven, but in reality, it's continually debunked. And not only that, but again, you see through these agreements that we have with all these other nations, we're the only ones that are getting hammered economically. Meanwhile, China is free to pour as much carbon into the air as possible, and all these European Union countries. So what we need to do is we need to take care of Americans. We need to get the ship right, and we need to get moving in a direction that will start bringing people out of poverty, so we can get them off of government assistance, and we can get them from welfare to well-being.
Okay, let's move on to another question. That was very good. I appreciate that. Now, since our founders understood the importance of self-defense and national defense, the founders included the Second Amendment for protections for the people from government or foreign powers. What are your views about gun rights, right to carry, the government taking guns from people, government regulations to limit use of and storage of guns?
So another great topic. It's something that I am I'm very, very firm and fervent Second Amendment candidate. I have said that New Jersey has the third worst gun ownership in the country when it comes to gun rights, and I think California is the worst. And so for me as governor, I said that because somebody asked me, well, how will you get past the legislature? You're not going to make it any better. Well, I tend to disagree. Being a constitutionalist, I know that the Second Amendment says that the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. When you look at infringed in the dictionary, that means restricted. So any law that is put onto the Second Amendment that causes a restriction to your right to keep and bear arms is unconstitutional. So being the New Jersey governor, I would be able to appoint the attorney general as well as the county prosecutors. And day one, I said, day one, I guarantee and I vow, day one, I will tell the prosecutor and the attorney general that they are no longer enforcing a single law that restricts the Second Amendment. Knowing that, that will likely end up being challenged and taken to court. But day one, we will have open carry here in New Jersey because I am somebody that could care less about the government trying to infringe and attack us here over our constitutional rights. I know what the Constitution says, and I will gladly overturn that and tell them not to enforce it and let it go to the Supreme Court. I will happily take that on and stand for the rights of New Jerseyans to be able to have their constitutional values protected and secured.
Now, going on and extending that a bit, talking about some groups who currently use and have used guns for the protection of America, we know militia groups and veterans have been a part of the American fabric since the very beginning of America. What do you think about rights and benefits of veterans? What about the limitations placed upon our military to act to win in conflicts around the world? And I'll have more questions after you answer that.
Sure, I'm a Marine, so this is this one's going to go one-sided. We have the greatest military and the greatest people serving in our military, and I thank each and every single person that's listening for your service. I make it a point to thank the great Vietnam veterans who were not treated properly. Thank the forgotten war veterans of Korea and the Greatest Generation, my personal favorites. I love them, World War II vets. As well as those that have served even beyond that time and alongside me. Thank all of them for their service. They are amazing. They deserve to be given everything that they need to achieve success on a battlefield. That being said, I am not a man that is excited about war. I am not, into war. I wish that we had better solutions, and I'm not going to sit here and applaud the option of going to war. But if we have to, you better believe that we better support that military, give them everything they can to drop this thing and to knock it out as fast as possible. And that means eliminating those rules of engagement that were on since the day that I got there. Because you go into a battlefield and you have an enemy that you can't even see, and then you have to wait to hear them shooting at you to attack back. No, war is hideous. War is vile. War is bloody. And guess what? There are people that are fit for it, that are trained for it, and they need to be able to be allowed to do their job for the benefit of this country. That is like the only thing that the government is supposed to fund and pay for, which is why our budget is so big for it. You better believe that they better be allowed to do that job and not be restricted and be combat ready. The threat is real outside of this country with regards to our enemies and how emboldened they've become as a result of the past, even the past, 10 years, maybe 15 almost years, with leadership that really tied the military's hands and made a mockery of our military. So you better believe that I am all with President Trump. Taking care of the veterans at the VA and taking care of those that are out there serving, giving them everything that they need to win.
Now, this next sub-question is a bit sensitive, but we need to learn to discuss civilly all the questions, whether they be sensitive or not. Now, I worked in the civil service for the Air Force during Vietnam, and I know there are various ways everyone can serve in military-related and support jobs. And we know we all have constitutional rights, yet we know many of us are limited to work in some jobs due to our age, our training, and other screening requirements. And I'm wondering, too, how this next question might apply to your state militia. But that said, what is your view about women and gays serving in the military, on the battlefield, in support services, or your view overall?
Yeah, it's a good question. So when I was in the Marines, obviously I had a different perspective while being out on the battlefield. Generally, you want to support anyone that wants to serve our country. So technically, I do. I think that it's best left to the troops and to the military itself to not get political and not be political. So I had a debate several years ago where I completely obliterated the opposition talking about President Obama's choice to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And so, you know, I think that the military should not be politicized. I think that it should be up to them and to their command units to make those decisions. And I think anything other than that is absolutely disrespectful. I think that it is, you know, it's a cheap ploy for political points. So if that means that the military commanders determine that women should be on the front lines, or that you know, gays or transgenders should be on the front lines or allowed in the military or whatever, then so be it. That is up to the military command units to make that decision. You know, the same thing applies. You know, when I got in, you had to get a waiver if you had smoked marijuana. And then other times didn't have to get a waiver, and then they have the tattoo waiver. It changes depending on who is in charge of the military, and I think it's best that we continue to leave them in charge of that, depending on how the battle is shaping up. So, you know, that's really where I'm at in terms of, you know, the military and as far as the social issues with regards to it.
Well, thank you for being transparent and answering the sensitive questions as well. Now, we have one more large area that might take you a bit of time, and that's all I have prepared. If we have time, we could take a caller, and then I'll try to give you 5 minutes at the end to give us a recap and whatever you want to say. But a big issue lately has been healthcare. Now, ideas and terms bantered about are single-payer healthcare, Medicaid, Medicare, employer-paid healthcare with preferred providers, healthcare IRAs, and tax implications of all these. Well, before you talk about all these, please also include what are your views about repealing and replacing Obamacare, what would you consider a good healthcare plan for America, and or you could share the pros and cons of the various types of healthcare.
Sure. So, I'm glad that we have so much time left, because this is a big topic, and it's something that is really, really difficult. So I give a lot of credit, you know, to this administration for wanting to tackle it right off the bat. Obamacare is a disaster. I'm not going to mince words on it. It's an absolute disaster. And they can sit here, and again, it's about pundits. It's about punchline pundits. There may be people listening out there that are saying, well, you know, no, that's not the case. Listen, I'm telling you for a fact that the majority of Americans are not educated, and the education that they receive is education that is from biased media outlets. The reality is that there are people that did gain health insurance coverage from Obamacare. The numbers are drastically fewer than what they are touting. They're saying 20 million, but the stats have proven that it was more like 5 million. And then when you add all the people that lost coverage as a result of Obamacare, it became too expensive, the numbers just get astronomically smaller. Now, as a result of Obamacare, it's just astronomically expensive. It's expensive on the states, and there's talk of it bankrupting, I believe, Medicaid within the next few years, or Medicare. So the reality is that healthcare is, you know, it's a dangerous issue, and we want to be able to provide for the well-being of all the people in this country, both poor and rich and old and not, and so forth and so on. But let me just explain something. When it comes to healthcare, that is our job to take care of ourselves. Unfortunately, things happen in life and you get sick, and that does happen. I believe that no matter where you are, if you have an illness, that somebody should be able to treat you. I do believe that somebody should be able to. Now, whether or not you're able to afford it at the time, that's got to go on you. Unfortunately, that's a part of life, and the government cannot guess or second guess or try to put a system together that is able to provide for those types of things. It does not. It's bankrupt. You know, we're going to be bankrupt as a result of it. The insurance companies are dropping out of Obamacare. So what we need is a plan that strips every single bit of the government from healthcare, 100%. completely and entirely out of health care. What we need is we need to go back to a constitutional form of health care where competition rules. If you want, you see that the pharmaceutical prices, you see the cost that it goes. I mean, it's like $500 to take my kids to a pediatrician. It's outrageous. And that's not even really the best pediatrician around. So the reason, the biggest issue is that when you have government involved, when you have all this legislation that people have to jump around, and when you've got all these issues where competition doesn't rule and people going to one place or another, right? That is an issue. That is why you have all the expenses that you have, all those things that I've mentioned. What we need is we need to be able to shop around, and that naturally will lower the costs of everything. Because if you're a terrible doctor, guess what? You're going to have no clients, or you're going to be extraordinarily cheap. And if you're a really good doctor, if the competition is just as good, you're going to lower your rates to get people into your practice. That is natural. That's, if you kids with a lemonade stand, you got a kid out there with 25 cents, the next kid moves in, he's asking for a dime or he's asking for 20 cents. It's natural. Why? Because you want to make as much money as you possibly can, and so does the other person. And that's all there is to it. But there's this ideology that's been ruling in this country where we hate capitalism and we're afraid of the competition. Listen, not everybody is built for competition, but the reality is that we have a system that is built for competition, and we need to use that when it comes to healthcare. We need to completely repeal Obamacare. The Graham-Cassidy bill was a good step to getting rid of Obamacare, but ultimately there was those few people that stepped up on the Republican side to keep it from actually happening. One man who is a very principled constitutional guy, he's a libertarian, unfortunately, but. The few people didn't believe that it was a bipartisan or whatever their excuses. Listen, I think that I'm very constitutional, and I think that the greatest opportunity for us to eliminate Obamacare, it needs to be taken out. It is absolutely destroying this country, and it needs to be removed. If that means that we turn it over to the states and there's still the funding involved, I am not a fan of that, but I am a fan of that right now as being the first step to completely eliminating the government from being involved in our healthcare. I stand entirely for the government taking a seat and moving out of the way to let the free market system do what it does best.
Now, you have touched on my next sub-question a little bit, but I'd like to take it just like an offshoot from this subject. It's connected, but it's from an educational point of information view, and having been a history and government teacher, I'm interested in your view on this, because I think it's a weakness of our American youth not to know about this next question. Do you see single-payer health care as socialist, private health care more for a republic, and is it important to have economic systems perpetuated by our type services to remain a republic?
Yes, absolutely. Single-payer health care is a socialist form of health care. There's no doubt about it. The VA is single-payer health care, and I can tell you personally, as I have been serviced at the VA, it is the worst place that you could ever go to get health care. I'm sitting here right now waiting. I think it's been 5 weeks to get an appointment. I went in with an emergency. They didn't even have an emergency room. I had to drive an hour to get – there's only two hospitals in the state of New Jersey. Ironically, they're placed 15 minutes apart from each other in the center of New Jersey. You don't have main roads that really lead to them from certain areas in New Jersey. It could take over 2 hours to get to these hospitals. I had to drive an hour because my eardrum exploded about a month back during the campaign, and I was in extreme pain. I mean, I've had some serious pain in my life. This was extreme, and I had to go. They didn't have anybody there. There was no emergency room. It was a walk-in clinic. It took 3 hours to get out of there with medicine. 3 hours. And by the way, I was the third patient there that morning, and I got there at 6:55 in the morning. There were three patients, and it took 3 hours to get out of there and to actually have medication. And the medication wasn't even really the right medication. So it's just absolutely pathetic. The lie that's being sold to the public is that single-payer healthcare is the best thing ever, and people are not being educated, as you said, not just the youth, but in general, even the elderly. The elderly, I'm hearing it from them all the time. We want single-payer. You don't even understand what it is. The education that you're receiving is you're hearing crazy old Grandpa Bernie sit there and scream about how there should be Medicare for all, when in reality he doesn't even abide by that. And 10 years ago they have him on, or 15 years ago they have him on tape saying that Medicare for all would bankrupt our system. So we need to wake up. There is a socialist agenda that is going on in this country that is absolutely trying to erode the foundation of this country for whatever reason. Right? There could be several different reasons. Maybe it's, you know, by accident. People are really wacky and think that it's the best thing ever to give free to everyone. Or maybe there's really an outside hand like George Soros, like what people are talking about. And obviously, you know, you have deep state and all this other stuff. I don't know. But what I will tell you is that there is a serious threat to our country continuing through socialist ideology and agendas to try and supplant the Constitution and supplant the free market system, which would absolutely fix all of our problems here in this country and in a very short time.
Well, from what I'm hearing you say, and maybe this will be an assignment for me as a history teacher, I can sort of see the beginnings of a chart or a schematic. I remember seeing one years ago as a student that shows how the services from private enterprise work within the framework of a republic and perpetuate the republic in a healthy status. So maybe that will be a job for me. And I see that we have a little bit of time for our caller to ask you a question. Matt, would that be okay with you?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Okay, caller, when I say hello to you, please tell us your first name and what state you're from. Okay, you're connected, caller.
Hi, my name is Val Somerville, and I'm living in Ohio, and I am calling to find out what reason you believe that the GOP would be interested in supporting you, a third-party candidate, over supporting the candidate that's running currently.
Good question,
Matt. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks so much for the phone call, and it is a great question. So, you know, the GOP in this state, if you are a Republican, you need to look at your Republican candidate and realize that that there's a lot of baggage that is tied. She's a current lieutenant governor of the worst governor probably in the country, and definitely in the history of the state, you know, as far as polls speaking, Chris Christie. She's been there during Bridgegate. She's been there during Beachgate. She's been there during the 11 credit downgrade. She's been there as the person who was she self-described herself as being in charge of the economy back in 2010. The economy is the worst in the country, have the worst economic outlook, $350 billion in unfunded liabilities. She is pro-choice. She is pro-climate change. She is pro, pro-transgender in terms of the agenda and the legislation to pass to get school bathrooms and all this other nonsense. She's anti-Second Amendment, anti-First Amendment. I mean, in reality, why would you vote for anyone that's like that to begin with? But, you know, Democrats do things like that sometimes. But why would you vote for somebody like that? And as a Republican, how could you even sit here and call yourself a Republican if you're willing to vote for somebody like that? And then beyond that, I look to the Republicans and I say, listen, are you a Republican or are you an American? If you're an American, you need to really look at the choices that you have. You've got Phil Murphy, the Democrat, who is an absolute he's a Goldman Sachs guy. He is an Obama guy. He's the one that helped get Obama elected, $300 million to the DNC during the 2006-2008 campaign. He was given the ambassadorship to Germany as a result. This is the guy that's sitting on the horizon, and the best choice that the Republican Party could come up with was a liberal Republican. For me, obviously, that bothers me. The only thing that can tackle a man like Phil Murphy, who's got Goldman Sachs money, who's got the Obama endorsement, is going to be somebody that is that is the exact opposite. And the exact opposite of a socialist is a constitutionalist. The exact opposite of a Goldman Sachs banker is a young family man who is involved in, you know, a small business. And with regards to that, my hands are literally dirty from handing out 7 years worth of foreclosures that came as a result of Phil Murphy being the banker at Goldman Sachs. So when you look to a candidate, if you're a GOP person in the state of New Jersey, that typically means that you align conservatively, typically means that you are, you know, more for the Constitution than the opposing side. So if that's what you're looking for, and if you're looking for a candidate of the future, somebody that can really change everything about your life here in New Jersey, I don't see why you wouldn't want to take the chance. You know, I'm here, I'm fighting, I'm a Marine, I've got the strength, I've got the courage, you know, I'm an Ivy League guy, so I've got the intellect, I think, and then, you know, I'm a Christian man, you know, who is very principled and stands for the Constitution, so I've got the integrity thing. I really think that the best option here in November will be myself, and for anyone that stands for those values, I think that you really, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to come up with a reason why you would vote for the Republican nominee.
Well, thank you, caller, for that question. And that will be probably the last call we'll take tonight. But we are nearing the end of our broadcast, and we'd like to give Matt opportunity to share for the next 5 or 10 minutes anything he wants to recap or anything new to share and sum up about why he should be your next governor for New Jersey. Matt?
Yeah, so thank you again for the opportunity. It's a great pleasure, and it's been such a great pleasure to run for the past 8 months. It's been my pleasure to meet the people of New Jersey again and again over the past 8 months. I've been doing it for the past 7 years, coming face-to-face with these these heartbroken people, but, you know, still wonderful people who love and treasure and cherish the state. So why me? You know, I've given the speech over and over again. I am somebody that is, you know, fresh blood. I am the next generation. I am a millennial. I am a Marine. I am an Ivy League guy. I am a father. I am a husband. I am a Christian. I am a constitutionalist. These are all qualities that you look for when you want someone that's going to bring leadership to the table. New Jersey is lacking leadership. America is lacking leadership. Whether you agree politically or not, we have to understand one thing, that it always comes back to the Constitution. Why is there so much divide in this country? Because, much like our opponents in previous wars, especially World War II, we understand that when you demonize the opposition, it becomes very, very bloody. The battle right now is bloody here in America, the political battle that's waging. We see that it's gotten out of hand and out of control. And the reason why is because both sides are playing the zero-sum game. It's a total war. We have no room to slip or slide either way. What we need is a leader that can step up and that can unite people, that can bring them and coalesce them around something. And the only thing in this country that we can coalesce around is the Constitution. You know, our religions are different religions. We've got our different ethnicities and backgrounds and languages. We've got our different ideologies and our different ideas for how to go ahead and how to, make government work. And that's all fine. But the one thing that should always remain here in America, the one thing that should always unite us and bring us together is the Constitution. And the Constitution dictates that we deserve life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we have certain inalienable rights. Obviously from the Declaration of Independence, but they are outlined there in our Constitution for us to abide by and for us to have the best possible form of government, a government that serves us. What we have currently in this country is we have a government that serves itself. They are rulers. They are not representatives. They have chosen time and again to forsake people for themselves, for their own benefit, taking on private funding, taking on funding from overseas corporations and organizations, being involved in backroom deals time and again, deals that have led them to the table with our enemies, including Iran, including China, including North Korea, places that do not hold a very fond view of America. And that is no different for us here in New Jersey. We have leaders that have continued to hold meetings with bad guys, with people that have zero interest whatsoever in the benefit of the people of our state. In New Jersey, we have enormous problems, debt that has skyrocketed through the roof. We have enormous taxation, and the only response, the only way that they see fit how to fix this problem is to continue to tax people. There's only two ways. You can create revenue through taxation to try, because you got to pay the debt. You can create revenue through taxation to pay off the debt, or you can come up with a plan that brings revenue into our state, that releases people from the bonds that are currently being held by the government and gives them liberty and a free market system that produces revenue that can pay off the debts as opposed to the taxation. Now, what happens when you tax the people? The people run, and they have. They've run out of our state. The businesses have as well. We need to reverse the curse. I am the only person that's talking about it, the only person that is sitting here literally every single day telling you that I will reverse that curse. I will give you the liberty that you deserve. I will not take a paycheck. I will donate my entire salary to show you that I care about you more than I care about my own self. Our next generation, those that are hurting out in the streets in the cities of Camden and Jersey City and Newark and Irvington and Atlantic City and Union City and East Orange and so forth and so on, every broken child, every child that is not receiving a good education, every child that is seeking to find their identity in rap music or trying to find their identity in a gang, every child out there that is hurting from the fatherless homes that our federal government continues to proliferate through tax incentives and payments, every single person that feels that they have been left behind, those that are involved in the drug pandemic, for the children that have gone missing, for the women that have gone missing every single day in our state and nationwide to sex trafficking, a vile and hideous side of humanity that has reared itself all throughout our country and here especially in New Jersey. For every single person that has been lost, left behind, or forgotten, my heart is for you. I will not take a paycheck. I will not rest a night knowing that you are out there, that you are still not accounted for, that you are hurting, and that you need liberty. I have seen the faces every time that I've handed out the paper. I have seen the faces of people broken by the foreclosure, by the fact that their finances are in ruin, by the fact that that caused their family to break apart. Finances, money that was taken through taxation so that people had to work three jobs to compensate for all of that money. Meanwhile, politicians hold backroom deals and pass out contracts to the tune of $15 billion with no return of investment. They gave those contracts to their friends. Their friends never did the job, and we got nothing as a result. How many of those people would have benefited from those $15 billion? How many lives would be changed? How many families would be held together? How many children would not be orphans? How many kids would not have turned to drugs if that money had been where it was supposed to be, back in the pockets of the people, if they had the power that they were supposed to have to keep their representatives in control? New Jersey, day one, I will be your representative, not your ruler. I will give you all the time that you need to tell me what it is that you want me to do, because above all else, one, I have a contract, and that contract legally binds me to you, and two, above all else, I am listening. I love you. I am so thankful to be a New Jerseyan. I am so thankful and proud to be an American. May God bless every single person that's listening, as well as you, Diane, for this opportunity. And thank you to everyone that has continued to support. We love you, and we could not be where we are today without you.
Wow, Matt Riccardi, you sound conservative to me, and a strong advocate for the people of New Jersey. I sincerely hope this interview will help get your information out to the people of New Jersey. And I want to thank you, Matt, for sharing your views with us tonight and giving you, the voters, the opportunity to get to know your candidate for governor of New Jersey. I'm looking forward to seeing Matt Riccardi be the next governor of New Jersey. Thank you for being with us tonight, Matt. I will be giving the contact information for people after you go. You're welcome to stay on and listen, or you can go. But thanks for this opportunity to interview you tonight. I really enjoyed it. Remember, if you want to donate to Matt's campaign, you can donate through his website. Remember, thank Riccardi for New Jersey. It's www.r4nj.org. And he's on Facebook. He will probably post and perhaps interact with you there or his staff. It's www.facebook.com/ the whole name Riccardi, the number 4NJ. Or you can write to Matt and send a donation if you want at Riccardi for Governor, P.O. Box 902, Neptune, New Jersey, 07753-0902. You can email Matt's staff at communications, the whole word communications, at r4nj.org. Also, two Twitter accounts, at Riccardi4NJ and Team Riccardi NJ. And if you want to research and listen to this interview again, you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/ Diane-Lenning and look for the interview with Matt Riccardi. Now, as Matt has encouraged me, I will continue to do what I've been doing for several years now, and that's trying to educate the American people about the Constitution and our rights to freedoms and liberties. And you can view my post regularly, almost daily, on either Facebook or Twitter. My Twitter accounts are at Lady Di, it's just LDYDI, or at Diane Lenning, EDM/JD. One, I have the red hat for Trump. The other one, my blonde hair of quite a few years ago. When I looked younger, I wanted to present a good image, right? So you can follow up and hear and watch your candidate, Matt Riccardi, for governor of New Jersey. Thank you so much. We'll sign off tonight with a little bit of music, and I think you'll enjoy that. Looking forward for a possible interview next time. We'll see. Take care, everybody. We love you. We love America. And may God bless America. For being with us. Good night, all, and may God bless America. Take care. We love you. Good night.